This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. They are also my patent lawyers. For those of you who don't know, I have 4 patents, and Larson & Larson have walked me through all of them. They are really fantastic. So if you have an invention, contact Bill Larson at Larson & Larson, and he will help you. It's just wonderful to be able to patent something. And so I just want to recommend Bill to all of you. Now, I'm really excited. I have a fantastic guest in the studio with me today, Dr. James P. Gills. And I'm going to talk to him in just a few minutes. But before I do that, I just want to remind everyone, the Writer's Digest Indie Book Contest is nearing its deadline. It's April 3rd. So if you have published your book independently, this is an opportunity for you to submit your book. It's only $25, and you should try it because it is just a great opportunity to receive a very, very professional critique. And also, who knows, you might win. And the prize is fantastic. $8,000 for the first prize. And of course, you get all sorts of coverage. And even for the lower prizes, you will get noticed by agents. So enter it now. You have lots of time. You have 2 weeks. So get your book in shape. Go to readersdigest.com and writersdigest.com. And submit your book. It's a wonderful opportunity for you. Now, I'm going to turn to my guest, and I have here a pile of books, of his books in front of me. I don't know where to start because this is, you know, it's really for all of you out there who just love to read. Dr. Gill's books are just wonderful, inspiring, and fantastic. So I want to tell everybody a little bit about Dr. James P. Gills. He is a world-renowned ophthalmologist. For everybody in our area, of course, we all know him as the founder and a leader in ophthalmology here in our area. And I want to say hi, Dr. Gills.
Hello. How are we doing, Patsy?
Great. Okay. Well, of course, you founded St. Louis Cataract Laser Institute in Tarpon Springs. How long ago was that?
About 45 years ago, 50, something like that.
And I think you still hold the world's record for eye surgeries and lens implant surgeries?
I don't know, but I did it when I left.
You did. Boy, it's amazing. And your practice, of course, is world-renowned because of the really many, many innovations that you brought to the whole art of eye surgery.
I think I had 77 different countries come to me for surgery, which may be the record according to Hopkins.
Wow, fantastic. And of course, you got your medical degree from Duke University, and you went on to Johns Hopkins.
And I came back to Duke and taught for a few years.
Now, let's get to your books. You know, it was so funny. The first of your books that I read, and I, of course, everybody who listens to this program knows I love to read it. So it's really fun that when I was reading and I came across this passage, ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny. Ooh, wow. I just love that. I love when I find something that I don't know what it means, but it was really great. This is in a book called Darwinism Under the Microscope, How Recent Scientific Evidence Points to Divine Design. And I think it's a great book. It's a kind of book that you can pick up and you read. You read it once and you want to go back and you want to learn more because you have just approached it in such a, I found it delightful. The first story is Coffee, Darwin, and Design. And it has, is basically two young students, young female students talking about Darwinism. One has listened, both have listened to the professor. One comes out with one belief and the other with the opposite belief. So it's a nice way to introduce the entire idea of Darwin and why he's wrong.
Well, he wouldn't be wrong if he was living today and using a microscope, because he was sincere, and he gave all the premises for a design that Tom Woodward so beautifully employs in his explaining intelligent design.
Well, we are, but nowadays, and I think in schools, we still are taught Darwinism.
Let's take time and think that through and use both arguments. And let's be a good lawyer and present the evidence on one side and then present the evidence on the other side. I think when we expose everything, and there's a lot to be exposed, and I think the biggest thing to be exposed, the people that stick behind the idea of Darwinism are really trying to protect themselves, and we all want to protect ourselves, but they don't want to be responsible, and everybody has to be responsible in medical care, in medical thinking, scientific thinking, religious thinking, and economics. We have to be responsible. Until we become responsible, we have a very, very sick society.
Well, tell us, let's start from the beginning. Let's start from the cellular level. Can you tell us about cells? What should we know about cells?
How many cells do you have in your body?
I don't know. How many?
That's 60 trillion, 100 trillion. Maybe I have more than somebody, but it's that many. And then they're just many, 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 many. Here, it's right here. And it's right in the front. We go over it. And there's a guy by the name of Tom Woodward that really goes over this. And he points out the fact that we have different types. We have over 200 different types of cells. Let's imagine your shoulder. Let's say it has 200 different types of cells, 150 different types of cells, but a trillion different cells, and they're integrated together. How did the nerve know where to go? It's kind of like, how did the thermos know whether to be hot or cold? But no, how did the nerve know where to go? How did the bone form itself? How did it develop a function?
And this is where we come into intelligent design. Somebody had to design this.
Yeah, well, and it's a lot more so than anybody around here.
Yes. People are, there are all these headlines that the robots are going to take over and they are going to rule the world because they're going to become so intelligent. And yet not even the best robot in the world can match the amazing, amazing function of simple cells.
The simple cell is not simple.
Exactly.
I mean, it's got all the interior design. And it was about 65 years ago that Eccles was measuring the potential inside of a cell. And so we thought we'd be smart and we'd copycat it. So I developed a little pipette that would measure the potential across a cell wall. And I have an invention on that. It's just in medicine, we publish our micropipette puller. And that micropipette puller measures across the very thin cell wall and can affect of the different solutions we bathe the cell wall in. And that was so long ago, I don't remember so much besides what's published. And I've got a lot published on that.
Well, it is a miracle of life that we have over the past, quite a few years now, that we've beginning to understand DNA and beginning to understand some of the functions of
the epigenome. The epigenome really controls it. It's the modulator of the DNA, DNA, and the RNA unit produces your proteins, which produce a function. What's really important is the structure that we have and controlling it. And we first started talking about the epigenome, and we have a book here on that. We wrote one of the first books on the epigenome, and that's around the genome. It really holds down the suppression, and then when it's deactivated, it will rise. But it's very important. Now, some disease processes, they look at the different types of epigenome that may play a role in this, and they treat accordingly at Johns Hopkins. And I didn't realize it had gone that far until one of the doctors who's head of ophthalmology there, Peter McDonald, he was really just a wonderful man. And he pointed out that this is one of the biggest advances. But if we didn't know about it a decade or two decades ago, when you talk to my friends that were graduate of med schools, they looked at me kind of funny, and they'd been from the same med schools. And now it's common knowledge.
So when you started, like when you got interested in Darwinism and analyzing and comparing the process, why some people wanted to believe in Darwinism and why others believe in intelligent design. When did you become interested in this?
Oh, I think that's been all of life for most of us. Because why is there everybody wants to get and everybody wants to give. But when the giving is sincere, then you're giving to people who are not the greedy but the needy. And you're giving more than you're taking. And that is a beautiful part of life. I have a cousin, or distant cousin, Dois Rosser, is 95 now. He's in Virginia, and he's established churches of all denominations, but not, they aren't. He hasn't established. He's helped them. He's helped almost 7,000 churches get established in the last 30 years. But from that, they've multiplied into about 38,000. Now, these aren't what you'd think of churches. They're basically, it's the biggest frame in the community. And the community is primarily a bunch of thatched roofs. And we will build a 1,000-square-foot hut as an initial investment. But that may grow and grow. In Vietnam, South Vietnam, there was a nice little man and his wife, and they were building a 25 by 40 church. The people came out of the mountains, they killed that little man. But his wife took over with her son, and now they're like, I think they're 47,000 people involved out of that one church that's 40 years later, 30 or 40 years later. And they have about 17 daughter churches and 5,000 within the single church.
Well, of course, this is part of this belief with intelligent design and believing in God, that there's a bigger purpose to life.
If life isn't lived for others, it's not worthwhile.
Well, your book, Exceeding Gratitude for the Creator's Plan, is a really lovely book, and it, as you describe it, discover the life-changing dynamic of appreciation, because appreciation is the key to appreciate what God has given us and appreciate what we have.
Radical gratitude. Radical gratitude is great.
So with this book, what you have in this book is sort of a day plan, going through days. And what do you hope with people will get out of this book?
That they don't be superficial. Look below this, look into the cell and see how detailed it is, and start appreciating that you weren't planned just by your mother and father, or you weren't a mistake. Everything is planned, and there's a purpose in life. You ought to appreciate your Creator, Sustainer, and Redeemer. I went to a church not long ago, and they used the name Redeemer 50 times during the 2 hours we were there. And I realized that church had to be really a deeper church than many people gave it credit for being. Because the word Redeemer is a great word. It took me years to understand it after I'd spent a decade on abiding, it took me years to understand what does Redeemer mean. And every group from that worships in the Judeo-Christian religion understands what the Redeemer is. And unless you have Jesus or the Word of God living in you, you don't have Christianity or Judeo-Christian religion. You've got to have the Word in you that responds when somebody criticizes what you do. Be gracious and be thankful, for they criticize the prophets before you, and you will be blessed and you will experience greater strength as you look at them and say thank you and go on. Because it's constant. The agitation in society is so great now. We just see it constantly, and it's wonderful. And just be glad when you're criticized. I have it open, the book over here. It's Matthew 5, 10 through about 13 in the Amplified. It's beautiful.
Well, of course, you know, when we talk about, well, first of all, when we talk about getting criticism, most people don't like it. Most people don't want to hear.
None of us do.
You know.
But we realize it's good. None of us want to work. None of us want to give. But it's the most beautiful thing we do is to get rid of ourselves and become humble and not be grabby. The biggest negative part of any of this is grab, grab, grab. And it's the hardest thing for the people that work for me to understand what I want to do. They don't understand it, and they think it's crazy. What do you get out of this? Nothing. And then you're perfect. When you can abandon yourselves, as many of your friends have in your life, and I've seen it in my life. I see Dois. He's given everything away, and he just has nothing left besides a wonderful family. But you cannot always keep that family together unless they also are givers. They have to be givers. And there's some people you'll never train to the point they become rich by giving. And the one thing that's bad is when we're extravagant, we're going to fail. It isn't if, it's just when. So you have to be simple, and you have to give, and you have to have a life that really is for others and not for yourself. And you have to sometimes make tough choices and really stick with them, that you're going to give everything, not to the greedy, but to the needy.
Well, in this book, Exceeding Gratitude for the Creator's Plan, you have it, you write it here, through the days. And I think if people read this book just a little bit every day, it will really help you to focus on the important things in life. And as Dr. Gill says, it is learning to go beyond yourself, beyond what you think is possible. And the book is really quite amazing, not just from the point of view that I think it's inspiring, but also it is filled with so many interesting facts and ideas that one might not be aware of. And I was looking here at one of the pictures, and of course of the eye, and your, when you were working, when you first started working on the eye, is that like one of the things that you realized that, boy, a human couldn't design this thing? In many ways, the eye, you look at it and you say, well, it shouldn't work. There are things, elements there that it should be the other way around. But in fact, the eye is perfect.
Nothing's perfect.
Well,
and we have to realize we aren't, it isn't, and appreciate our designer and appreciate the fact that he sustains us and redeems us, and we're going to be with him for eternity.
Well, when you were started working on eyes, how did you do it? I mean, when I looked at this, you know, analyzing the eye and how you made all of these discoveries of how to fix the eye and do this thing, this was amazing work that you've done.
I don't think it's amazing. I think it'll be far greater things to be done in the future. But I was at a good time in life, and timing is everything in life. And, you know, I happened to fall into the Iron Man, and one of my friends who's same age. We would have finished Annapolis the same year if I'd gone there. And he was such a stimulus to me to go run 100-mile runs and do the Ironman and so forth. And so he's just a great guy. But the timing was great. And then a guy didn't do well in trying to run the Ironman. So we tried to take it over, and we made every mistake possible. But we ended up keeping it long enough to get it on its feet and get rid of it for about 19 years, I think we had it.
Well, of course, I wanted to mention that you are very, very well known for the Ironman triathlon. I think you hold the record for finishing 6 double.
Well, I don't know whether that's true or not anymore. I finished my last double at 60 years of age.
Wow.
But at 56, I was 1 minute behind the first American.
And that's quite an accomplishment.
It was fun. We were, you know, it's interesting. Neither one of us were thinking about ourselves. We both were using different scriptures that were encouraging and uplifting. And the guy was 28 years old, and I was 56. And he was on my 56th birthday, I think. And we basically were going back and forth who was first. And among the Americans, the Europeans beat us. But we were running, and it was just a great time. And it was good.
Oh, it's a fantastic thing. Now, I'm going to have to take a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. Gills about God's prescription for healing, he has a wonderful foreword by Dr. Benjamin Carson, and a couple of the other books. We'll be right back.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
And to celebrate March as National Sleep Awareness Month, Mike is offering 50% off his 4-pack special.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-871-1543 and use the promo code PATSY, and Mike will offer you free shipping. Once again, that's 800-871-1543. Promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guest, Dr. James P. Gills, who is a world-renowned ophthalmologist and the founder of St. Luke's Cataract. What is it? Cataract Hospital?
It's Cataract and Laser, and I used to be there. I have basically retired over a year ago.
Yes. Okay, and your son, Dr. Pitt, has taken
fantastic.
Over, and he's brilliant, and everybody who knows about laser surgery, always talk about Dr. Pitt, they say.
He's wonderful.
He is wonderful. So I'm so happy that you're here today. We're talking about some of your wonderful books. How many books have you written?
31.
31 now. And many of them, of course, I understand, have been sent on to prisons.
We have 11 million copies of the books in prisons.
Well, I hope that they inspire people for good in prisons, because they need they it's first of all, it's a shame we have so many people in prison, but when they get there, they need some really good advice, and your books are fantastic.
We used to get 150 letters a week, but we don't anymore because we aren't sending. We were sending, let's say, I've forgotten, it's 40,000 or so a month, and then we'd get 150 letters a week.
Well, I think perhaps they need it more, even more now, because sometimes they get some bad ideas in these prisons. And one of the wonderful books that you've written is called God's Prescription for Healing and the Five Divine Gifts of Healing. It is a fascinating book. Tell us about it.
It's really a relive. It's Jamie Buckingham and I were kind of, he was my mentor. And he was a guy that had been through a lot. And some of my friends, Dallas Allbritton in Tampa, do you remember Lawyer Allbritton? But he told me about this gentleman, and I started seeing him maybe 35 or 40 years ago. And several friends from here went with us to the Sinai. And I would call and talk to Jamie Buckingham, and he developed a cancer. And so I followed him through all of his healings. And he was the editor of a magazine, and so I would write about our relationships and our conversations with articles in that magazine. And when he passed away, he had me write the story of his life as far as health is concerned. And it was a really interesting thing. A lot of things in life are your attitude, and it's a natural healing. You can cut your wrist, and my arm is just cut horribly by my dew claws on my big lab, and my arm is just shredded. But the Lord healed it, and we don't know how many reactions are involved in that healing, but it's God's way of healing it, and it healed. Then you can go with other things and ask, what medicine should I use? And that's another thing. James Avery, who was here in town, said, this is the best book to look at healing in general. James Avery, did you know him in Clearwater?
No, I haven't met him.
Okay. He was a good man, and he ended up being medical director of the New York Hospice. And then various other people, Dr. Kendall, who was in London and here, he was wonderful. And in any event, the most important thing is, there isn't one way of healing. There are many ways of healing. And don't think there's just going to be one. It isn't going to be just our attitude. There are many other ways. The healing, you've got to have the right attitude. And we talk about in here about a couple of tennis players. They're doctors. One was an ophthalmologist. And he was from Knoxville, I think. Yeah, Knoxville. And we visited with him in his house years and years ago, but he's passed now, but he developed a cancer. He had a stomach cancer, and he dropped down from 200 and some pounds down to about 98 pounds. And one of his sons was involved in physical therapy, and he got him out doing physical therapy. He had a peanut butter smoothie that he would drink, and he would not allow himself to think one negative thought. His partner, I think at that time, had a lethal midline granuloma or something like that. Anyway, they thought he was going to die. Neither one of them could have negative thoughts. They were state champions before. They became state champions again. They gained back all their weight, and they had the right attitude. They went to nationals, and they took nationals on hard court. Then they did it on soft court. Then they did it on grass. And when they came to grass, it was so funny. They had a regular tennis ball. They dropped it. Said, we've never played grass. And so they had to get another ball. Said, we can't bend over this foot. They were past 60 and so. And so they served in volleyball. There was a newspaper reporter that came in the day before and said, what's your story? We've never heard of you. And they told with tears as well as with smiles. And the story is written in here about how the next day they won, and I don't know what newspaper, but it was one that you'll see as you check out of a grocery store or something. It says, two doctors that should be dead win the Triple Crown in tennis. And the story is a whole lot of things. It's healing is complex. It's intercellular. It's medical. It's surgical. It's the right attitude.
It's so much is mental.
Yeah, but the last part is very important. And as I was telling you about Jamie Buckingham, Jamie was walking down the north end of Clearwater Beach over to Caladese with me 30 years ago, and before he died, 25. And he said, "How's it going, Jamie?" I said, "It's going like up and good and bad. And it's, but you know, we can deal with it because of who you've taught me to depend on and to abandon myself to and to pray with, laying it down flat and surrendering self." And I said, "How are you doing, Jamie?" He says, "Well, you know, it's better now than ever." And I waited a few minutes. I said, "What do you mean?" "Well, Patty and I've had, you know, some problems, and we're getting back together, and it's good. It's, you know, it's not like we were when we were 20s, but it's, life is good." Then I said, "Well, how is everything so good?" "Well, I don't have books to write. I don't have the church to take care of. I don't have the administration." And I said, "Well, what's so good?" "It's just Jamie and Jesus. It's just Jamie and Jesus." And he said that, and that stuck with me for the last 3 decades. It was just Jamie and Jesus. And he is just really a beautiful man. And I remember that Jamie and Jesus more than anything else.
So it's having faith.
It's abandoning yourself to him and not to things.
And overcoming fear?
He's not giving you a sense of fear, but a love, power, and a sound mind. Or worry. Be thankful instead of worry. Be radically grateful. And don't be materialistic. It's the biggest fake there is.
Well, most people want more. That seems to be the nature of people.
Yes, and that's got to be changed, even if it's hard on us.
That's not going to be easy. You can't do it on your own.
You have to do it on your own.
Yeah.
With your Lord, and love him more than you do yourself. My cousin Doris does it. Doris is a figure of somebody who's gone before that was part of our family. And my grandmother was a Rosser, and he's a Rosser. And they're an unusual group. And we have a lot of Rossers in this area.
So it's finding the strength in yourself that's important?
No, in him. Abandon yourself. You know you aren't strong. I'm not strong. But he is strong.
And this book, God's Prescription for Healing, of course, as I mentioned at the beginning, Dr. Ben Carson wrote a really wonderful preface.
Would you read it?
Yes. You know, Dr. Carson is himself such an inspirational person and really believes in people taking on responsibility. I think that's one of the things that he really has talked so much about, that people are responsible for their actions, for their life, and for making things better.
You have to be responsible. And everything, in insurance, in life, and everything.
So this book, which I, again, it's a book that I think people will enjoy reading, because there are a lot, it's very well written. There are very nice stories within it, as you said, about the two tennis players and about other people. And it really helps you to focus on the important things, the purpose of our lives and eternity. And it's been done very nicely with wonderful quotes here. I like this. I like the layout of this book. I think it's a kind of book that people will pick up. You can read once, and you can go back and find inspiration in the different quotes that you've put in this book. Very, very nice.
The most important thing Ben points out is that people come from all over the world for neurosurgery, for whatever things they do at Hopkins. But the most important thing isn't their disease or what they wear or who brings them in. It's what's in their heart, and it's not what they have or their recognition. It's who they really trust and hold to. And in his case, he's one of the strongest men in the Lord I know, and in the Judeo-Christian faith, and I don't separate the two. And I think they're a continuum.
You're right. And one of the things, of course, in this book, it says that you are your own best physician. And it is important that you understand yourself and take responsibility for yourself.
Absolutely.
Now, one of your other book, The RX for Worry, is subtitled A Thankful Heart. So RX for Worry, A Thankful Heart. Now, this book talks about worrying, and people are, I think the whole world is worried right now. Everybody's worried. Everybody's worried about everything. It's like you can't pick up a newspaper. You can't do anything anymore. You click on the internet, and there's something to worry about. And you write here about the worry disease. What is that?
There's a guy named Piper said, God is most glorified in us when we're satisfied with him. And that's from the beginning to the end. God is most glorified in us when we're satisfied with him. That's basically the Ten Commandments in a very simple way that you can understand it. You're an unbelievably bright lady, but I can talk to a four-year-old, and he will understand God is most glorified with us when we're satisfied with him, and we don't need any more. But you've got to have him in you so that when you get hit, the word comes back out. In other words, you are responding with the word of God, which is the important thing.
Because, you know, worries are just seem to be part of our life. It causes us to be uneasy and irritable, I think. You know, we get irritable when we're uneasy.
We know, everybody I know is like that. But sometimes it's modified by truly trusting. A lot of people go to church, they aren't Christians, they don't really trust. They haven't abandoned themselves, and they don't pray on their tummy, and they, maybe it's for other reasons, but the it's just, envy is so great.
So, how can we stop worrying? I mean, the disease, and then how do we, what? One of the things nice in this book are that you do have discussion questions and you have things that you could share with people in this book.
If you don't memorize the Word of God, you don't have it, you aren't a Christian, I don't think. Because, as explained 500 years ago in Switzerland, that there are two things that are together, and that's the Word of God and Jesus are the same. The rest of it is psychology, according to that priest that was in Zurich at that time. And he said, when you're hit, if the Word of God doesn't come back out, you've got a problem. And you see so many people that are so full of envy, they don't realize the hard work that has gone into the things that they're envying, and they don't want to do it.
You know, when I was reading this book, I was struck by the quotes that you put in the book from both the Old Testament and the New Testament, which I think people will find very helpful and very moving. And I really think that's a great part of the book.
Yeah, but the biggest part is to be in control. Control in a godly sense of your actions. In other words, so many people are out of control in their diet, their tongue, and they don't speak the word of God. You see so many people that are just way, way out of control.
And, well, part of that, I think, is we are living in such a hectic society that we don't take the time that we need to reflect. And that's why these books, all of your books, are so useful, I think, to people. If you take these books and you sit down every day and you read, I think they will inspire you to look at things differently, to rethink Darwinism and the greater universe. And I think you've done a fantastic job with these books.
Well, it's an easy way for me to communicate. And I get these books where people aren't so proud and arrogant. And pride and arrogance is a very difficult thing in all groups. And we go to the jails where people don't have, they have still have their pride and arrogance, but they realize there may be a chance. And that's where we get a response. We don't see much. We see most young people grabbing, most older people giving, and all of them are arrogant, and we're all arrogant in our own way. But the biggest thing is to destroy that and realize we have to rest in His redemption. And the word redemption is one word I'll leave with you that is probably the most important thing that we work for. And resting in His redemption is what a Christian is. You've abandoned yourself to His grace. The Dutch described it a few, maybe 100, 200 years ago, of going from being in His grace to being in His redemption for eternity.
Well, I think you've captured this in your books. They are very moving. And I hope that people will come to these books and really take time to not just to read the books, but then afterwards to sit and contemplate what they've learned. Because you've it's amazing when I think of the amount of work that you've done in your medical practice. You've been so busy for all of these years. And yet you had time to think about all of these deep and very serious matters.
Well, the people that bike with me and run with me know I memorize chapters after chapters. And so it changes the way I think. And I don't think you can do much unless you have a background of that and you have the Word of God in you. Remember, to be a true believer, you have to have the Word in you. You can't have Him in you, so you have the Word in you, and it comes back out. And it's understood sometimes, but not other times. You'll get in more trouble because of being a true believer than you will if you don't believe anything. But your peace is greater.
And you certainly have done an amazing, amazing work. Have you, do you speak at schools and...
I don't speak at schools, but basically what I've done is I probably every other weekend when I was active for 40 years, I was flying someplace to present papers. And so it was, and when I go, it usually is not pleasure trips, as my family will tell you. It was for business and purpose, and it was either in medicine or in other purposes. But Doris's group now has built, 38,000 or something like that churches in 84 countries.
Well, I think your work is amazing, and it's what I like about your writing is that it has two levels. It's very deep, and yet it's very approachable. The words themselves, the stories are stories that we can relate to, and that will in many cases touch your heart because they are. Of course, you learned a lot from your patients.
Absolutely. You learn a lot, and you try to talk to them, and you realize you can only get so deep.
Uh-huh.
But you can give them a book, and 1 out of 10 will read it. And 1 out of 10 of those will, we call it metanoia, will change the way they think. Metanoia, it means metanoia, changing the thought process. And sometimes people have a noetic of sin, which means a mind set of sin, just because they're greedy. And they will basically go to medical meetings, not for outcomes, but for incomes. And we're all guilty of that. Just have to check it at the door and be sure where we are.
Well, I love when you write there about how you comfort, you had to comfort your patients because it is a scary procedure.
Everything is.
I think particular eye surgery must be a very scary procedure for a person because everyone worries about not being able to see. And so what you've developed over the years of your fantastic surgeries, and then being able to help the patients overcome that fear, which they naturally have, I think, is wonderful too.
The whole profession of medicine has progressed so greatly in the last 100 years, it's unbelievable.
And I wanted to ask you about this word. I always love when I learn a new word. Storge?
Storge.
Storge. I didn't know this word before. What is storge?
It'll take a little longer, but let's see. What did I write there? It's really a form of love. It's one of the four, five types of love instead of just one.
And that's covered here in this RX for Worry. So, again, and also another one of your books is called Love, Fulfilling the Ultimate Quest. And I think this is a deeper analysis of what love, real true love is.
It is, but very few people are interested in reading about it. They want to feel it and feel it again.
Well, again, Storge is one of the five that you talk about, and it's an interesting book because the ancient Greeks had specific articulations for this, what love is, and this book it's a small little book, but it's again all of Dr. Gill's books are interesting to read. They're the type of books that you'll keep with you. And you'll go back over them again, and actually that you'll want to share with people. You'll say, well, I read this, and I would like you to understand it, too, because it is really great. And this book, Love, Fulfilling the Ultimate Quest, I think would be very helpful to a lot of people. Because
I wrote most of them because I didn't understand them thoroughly. I didn't understand the full thing of Darwin, and I started writing it. And then I gave one on epigenome, and I gave them to Tom Woodward. And he is such a good communicator. He communicated better. He took my little bit book and made it thicker, and he made it clear for people who had no intracellular background. And I'd written my first book was on molecular biology, and that was a long time ago, like 30-some years ago.
And now how many books did you say you've written?
31.
31 books. So all of your books are available on Amazon, and people can go there. And I'm going to put a link on my webpage. I have a special page on my website, which everyone should go to. It's radio-joyandpaper.com, and I will have this interview with Dr. James P. Gills up on there on my featured interviews. And I will also put links so that you can go and order his books because I think they're not only they'll be great for you, they're the kind of books that you will want to share and that you will want to, you know, if you have friends who are in need, friends who have problems, friends who need some inspiration, I think these books will be really, really helpful and really inspirational. And that's one of the wonderful things. As I said, there is a joy in life. There are many joys in life. You have your family, and those are your biggest joys, and those are precious to you, and you have to always, always just hold on to them and treasure them because you never know when they aren't there. So every day is a special gift from God when you have your loved ones with you. But then there's also this joy of getting the words on paper and the joy of sharing it. Because here, Dr. Gills, you really share all of these deep thoughts with people in such a lovely way that I think are very helpful. And, of course, you talk in here about so many different aspects of life and that are also relevant to people. And I think it all comes down back to the fact where we started about, as I said, I really like this book, Darwinism Under the Microscope, because it starts to put perspective on that we are not just a blob, that we are not just a something that, you know, something that just sort of came out of the scum. We are all something very special, and there is a specialness to life that is really quite miraculous.
It's amazing how life is great, and we're passing by the most important part, and that is that we are created. Everybody is created, sustained, and redeemed. And the last word took me a long time to understand what it meant.
Well, I think you've done a fantastic job in your books, and I want to highly recommend them to people. And I want to thank you so much for coming in today, Dr. Gills, because I think that if we can just touch, as you said, 1 out of 10 people might read a book that they're given, but if we can touch the hearts of people and get them to understand how important it is that we be generous in spirit and not be envious and just try to do our best.
Envy is the dirtiest four-letter word.
Because it stops you mentally. It stops you from...
It creates resentment.
That's right.
And the funny thing, it's the people that need to have it the least have it the most.
Yes, that's true. That's true. So
thank you.
I wanna thank you. And I want to remind everyone that next Tuesday I'm going to have David Baldacci on. And I will also have some very interesting news about some upcoming events that I think all of you will want to participate in. And so I'm really anxious to talk to you about that. Meanwhile, remember, again, if you have a question for our legal eagle, Bill Larson is going to be in. And this time I also have a few patent questions for him that some of you have sent in. So I will be happy to ask him that online. So if you've got that invention there and you're waiting to go to Shark Tank and you want some questions answered, I will ask Bill that. He's going to be here on August 4th, and he's our legal eagle. So make sure that you send it in. If you have a question, send it to me, Patsy, at radio-joyonpaper.com, and I will ask Bill Larson, our legal eagle, to answer both your intellectual property questions and also your patent questions for this very special show that's coming up on July 4th. April 4th. What am I? July 4th. April 4th. Okay. Bye for now. Have a great weekend. Find your joy and share it. And say something nice to somebody today. And I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room because he's always so good to me. Thanks, Ed. Bye.